Welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast, a podcast from the home of Scrum. In this podcast, we feature professional Scrum trainers and other Scrum practitioners sharing their stories and experiences to help learn from the experience of others. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ryan Ripley with Agile for Humans and professional Scrum trainer with Scrum.org. I'm stepping in as a guest host for episodes highlighting the experiences of other Scrum.org professional Scrum trainers. I hope you enjoy getting to know these amazing people. Welcome to today's episode of Becoming a Scrum Master. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me today, Mr. John Riley. John, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Ryan. How are you doing?
I'm awesome. I get to talk to people like you all day today, which has been great.
It's great to talk to you too.
Hard to complain when you're doing what you love.
That's right. That's right.
We'll jump right into it. I know the listeners like when we get straight to the point. John, can you share the story of how you first encountered Scrum and what motivated you to become a Scrum Master? Was there a particular moment or experience that sparked your interest?
Yeah. This is a great story, Ryan, or a great question. So regarding the first part about how I first encountered Scrum, it was actually sort of by mistake and sort of by, you know, my wanting to have some kind of change, because I came from a development background and great, you know, I was a great developer, great architect, everything like that. But in the end, one thing was always striking me, and that was that something was always wrong when we released. Something was wrong. Maybe it was buggy. Maybe it was just something that people didn't like. Anyway, I started becoming aware of Scrum and Agility when it first came out, and really didn't do anything to practice it until a couple years into it. Like I would say around 2004 was really my first experience with it. You know, took a class that someone had said, hey, try this Scrum thing. Then I did something really dumb. My first agile transformation when I really didn't understand agility. It was a massive failure for several reasons. One, I tried to do it by myself. Two, I didn't understand why we were doing what we were doing. And so it was just, it was just a complete failure. So anyway, fast forward a few more years, about 2010 was about my first exposure to a real Scrum environment and open spaces, everything. I was on the dev team, and it was for a banking application. And within a week, I was like, wow, okay, this is what I was expecting. I was in an environment with a team that was actually able to manage their own work. We were able to, you know, have conversations about things. We had things that were right split, everything like that. Well, I also saw what the Scrum Master was doing. And she was doing an amazing job running around trying to facilitate the needs of the team, the organization. And I said, you know what? That's what I want to do. I want to be a Scrum Master someday. So I actually got an opportunity once that Scrum Master left to become the Scrum Master of this team. That's really what it was. It was almost like a fish to water kind of thing where, you know, something was wrong. And then I finally understood, all right, well, we're really trying to focus on what the customer needs are. And that's why we're developing what we're developing. And it was more about the, you know, bringing value to the team, the organization, using self-management and empiricism, which I really discovered, you know, what empiricism really means by making things transparent first. And really that's kind of how it started. It was really just out of experience and, you know, kind of, saying, hey, what can we do here to improve ourselves? And that's really what it was.
Oh, it's great. And that kind of bleeds into this next question here about a specific project or situation where there was like a eureka or light bulb moment that, really highlighted the power and potential of Scrum. And if you could describe that.
Yeah. So it was actually, it's funny you say that was a nice transition, because it was actually with that first opportunity where I had the became a Scrum Master in that banking application. So, not much experience being a Scrum Master or, you know, interacting with Scrum Masters. And so the only thing I really had was, you know, the Scrum Guide. And I back then I treated the Scrum Guide like a Bible. This is a set of rules that we follow to make sure that we are doing things correctly. That was pretty much my mindset. And so I came in guns a-blazing, right? So we're going to do 15-minute daily scrums and no more. And, you know, we have to make sure that we have the checklist of things that we do for the sprint planning and all this other kind of stuff. So, yeah, that was another kind of a failure moment because people started not trusting me. I noticed that there was a lot of more resistance to doing, you know, making things transparent, moving things on a board or whatever. And I'm just like, well, this is kind of strange. And noticed a lot of silence in retrospectives. So had to take a moment. It was actually the eureka moment came when we had a conversation at lunch with a couple of guys around the team who are my friends also. And they said to me, you are really, you know, you're really taking this too seriously. We're not really liking you on the team. I mean, in so many words, that's what they said. And I said, well, okay, this is news to me. What can I do to improve? Guy's just like, lighten up, just, you know. And that kind of had me take a step back and have some awareness of, all right, what do we mean by that? And that's where I kind of took a step back and said, well, Scrum, as it's presented, is nothing more than a framework. And there's reasons why things are the way they are in the framework. And it's up to us to then make our own rules and principles and practices around that framework based on empiricism and self-managing teams and professionalism. So that's really what was the eureka moment for me. And seeing then how the team was behaving towards certain influences on the team. And, you know, just me taking more of a back seat on things and just making sure that I could do some more observation types of things rather than doing, you know, direct coaching sometimes, for example. It's like, you know, one time I just put a 1,000-piece puzzle in the team space, just put it there, didn't say anything else. And little by little, people would just, you know, take a break from what they're doing and just kind of do that puzzle or whatever. And people notice that things like, yeah, this is a great environment to be in. And it's just like those little influences to help the behavior of the team, you know, and help it be a space where it's, you know, where you can actually get things done. For example, that's what a true Scrum Master does, to really, you know, bring some value to the team, for example.
Yeah, and then, it's like those slight nudges just have such a huge impact, right?
Right, right. And sometimes that's all it takes. And it varies for team to team. I mean, some teams have absolutely no idea how to even work in a team space, so they might need more coaching. And so really, it was that eureka moment to not take Scrum for, you know, just a set of rules. It's a framework. And there's reasons why things are the way they are.
That's great. And it's kind of, again, I love working with PSTs because we're good at these transitions. So how has your perception and execution of the Scrum Master role, or the accountabilities, as we say now, how has all that evolved? Are there aspects of the role or the accountabilities that you view differently now compared to when you first started?
Most definitely. So the execution of Scrum Master, what I tend to do when I'm first on a team as a Scrum Master is I kind of take a temperature of the team, the organization, and, you know, the other teams as part of my first role. So I take an observational point of view first. And I've learned that doing that rather than seeing all the dysfunction and doing something about it first is the most effective on the team. you know, there's some like, especially line managers, you know, who manage people on the team might say, oh, we're expecting you to do some more. And, you know, sometimes that's a good time to say, okay, great. What are your expectations of me on the team? And that can transition into, well, this is what the expectations are, and this is the desired outcome. And, you know, then I kind of take up a coaching stance and say, okay, well, let's see how well this works in a month. And I'll tell you what I can and cannot do. So it's all about setting those boundaries, right? So then it transitions into, okay, let's set boundaries with the team. Let's set boundaries with the managers. Let's set boundaries with the product owner. Let's set boundaries with other people that you work with on other teams. So, it's definitely evolved into something of more of an observational point of view. And then I can get into some direct and indirect coaching.
It's amazing how just as good fences make good neighbors, good boundaries make good relationships, right?
Absolutely. And I found that setting them up as soon as you can at the right moment is so very important, because if you let those boundaries go, then that's when expectations kind of get misread or whatever. But that's a great analogy. I love that analogy, by the way.
Well, thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What advice would you give to someone aspiring to become a Scrum Master? Is there a particular mindset, skill, or habit that you believe is crucial for success in this role or while fulfilling the accountabilities?
Yeah, 100%. My very first piece of advice of someone becoming a Scrum Master, and this is a practice that I still partake in, is to find a mentor. Whether that means find someone who has been in a Scrum Master role before, or someone you really care about that has had the same experiences as you, find a mentor and get their take on what it's like to be a Scrum Master, maybe a day-to-day thing, laying out like, you know, what's the first 90 days? What can I expect here? How should I coach the team? And even, a good mentor is going to challenge you. So, you know, based on scenarios, like, you know, someone comes to the team and says that they're not getting along with someone else in the team. How would you handle that situation as a Scrum Master? Something like that. But I've always liked the pairing up relationship. You know, in the dev world, we talk about pair programming a lot. But that's really what advice I would give, is find a mentor, someone you can trust to help you understand what the Agile and Scrum mindset's all about.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's a great piece of advice. Yeah. Last question here. What is the one book every Scrum Master should read? And it doesn't have to be Agile. Doesn't have to be Scrum. Prefer it's not one of mine. A lot of people that have come on here said, oh, it's got to be Fixing Your Scrum. All right. Besides that, what's maybe a different way to frame this one, if it helps, like, what's the book that you read that made a lot of things click or really impacted the way you show up in the workplace or with teams, you know, that kind of experience?
The one book that you should read, for every Scrum Master is Drive by Daniel Pink.
Okay.
It's just an incredible book on leadership. I actually read the book before I became interested in Scrum. It was written in the mid-90s. But I think that a lot of what I practice, it goes back to some aspects of that book.
Oh, that's great. It's a good recommendation. Drive is definitely an important work about motivation, you know, both intrinsic and extrinsic. So good stuff there. John, anything you want to get in front of the listeners and the viewers before we wrap this one up?
Not really. I think that pretty much wraps it up. So
awesome. Well, John, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.